So these afflictive emotions that has been harming me from beginningless time, while this afflictive emotion is abiding and existing in my mind, and with great pleasure is harming you, and this being the case, how come that you do not get angry? So such kind of phobia representations is something that must be discouraged, and that is the wrong kind of passions and wrong forbearance. And we do have that kind of forbearance and patience towards afflictive emotions, because on the one hand we are unable to see the destructive effects of such afflictive emotions, and even on the occasion when we are able to see the destructiveness of afflictive emotions, we are unable to develop positive counter forces, and we let the afflictive emotions harm in the way they like. So to such destructive nature of afflictive emotions, not to get angry, and to voluntarily welcome them, and to practice forbearance is wrong practice of patience, and this must be discouraged. And this enemy of afflictive emotions is the most sworn enemies. And this is explained in the next verse, where it says that even if all the gods and non-gods, in other words, all the sentient beings of the three realms, if they all become your sworn enemy, and even these countless sentient beings have no power to throw you into the fire of hell without respite. So however powerful and however great the number of these sentient beings may be, but they will have no power. They have only the power to destroy your life, but they will not be able to destroy your mind, harm your mind, and particularly they will not be able to throw you into negative state of existence. So the maximum they can do is destroy your life or take away your life. But in the case of these powerful afflictive emotions, in the case of this enemy, the powerful afflictive emotions, when you meet with these powerful afflictive emotions, that even the mountains are turned into powder, turned into dust. So in other words, it's saying that in the case of this enemy, the powerful afflictive emotions, they have the power to throw you into that strong fire of hell, which turns even the strong mountains into dust, and you will be projected into such a state of existence within a moment. Now in the case of this enemy of afflictive emotions, in terms of function, not only they do not project you into negative state of existence, but also in terms of duration, in terms of time, these afflictive emotions are worse. They are very terrible, because this enemy of afflictive emotions, from beginningless time, their function is only to harm you and nothing else. So, in the case of other enemies, none of the external enemies will harm you for such a long time, as is done by the afflicted emotions. And there are other reasons to say that these afflicted emotions are more destructive and negative. Now, in the case of ordinary enemies, if you practice patience, and even if they harm you, and if you try to benefit them and help them, then because of such friendly attitude, and if you show respect, love, and praise, and in this way try to relate towards them, then this enemy, which has been your sworn enemy, can gradually become your friends, and a friend which would help you in every way. So such is possible. However, in the case of this internal enemies, the afflicted emotions, if you consult them and without trying to eradicate them, without trying to destroy them, if you try to make friends with the afflicted emotions, or if you think that it should be fine, and if you let the afflicted emotions arise without distancing yourself from them, then these afflicted emotions will bring more and more suffering, and they will only harm you and will not be able to help you. So reflecting in this way, such afflicted emotions who has been your enemy for such a long time, who is the cause of development of host of harms and destructions, and if these enemies abide and exist within one's heart, how could you enjoy without fear with this cycle of existence? And when the afflicted emotions are there, you get so disturbed that you are unable to digest your food, you are unable to get proper sleep, and even your friends and relatives become your enemies, and because of your unhappy mind, your life becomes short. In the worst case, you even go to the extent of committing suicide. So these are the results of afflicted emotions. And in the future lives also, you fall into negative state of existence. And even if you often higher forms of life, like that of a human being and so on, because of hatred and anger, you experience negative results. For example, if you, as a result of having killed other sentient beings, your life will be short. And so whether it is in this life or in the future lives, it is these enemy afflicted emotions which are the causes of development of all types of harms. And however, these afflicted emotions are existing and abiding within your heart, and enjoying and living peacefully. So this being the case, this being the state, so this is really not the time to remain or relax peacefully and to remain without fear by this state of cyclic existence. And also the guardians of the prison of samsara, and similarly those killer beings that takes your life in the realm of hungry ghosts and so on. These are the results of your having committed afflictive emotions. And so long as these afflictive emotions abide within your heart, and when these afflictive emotions abide very stably within your heart, then how could you say that you have peace? So in this way you should think about the nature of conditioned suffering. Nature of conditioned suffering should be understood by meditating on the faults of afflictive emotions, and you should come to a conclusive understanding, realizing that so long as one is controlled by afflictive emotions, one cannot have happiness. And it is these afflictive emotions which destroys oneself, which destroys the certain beings and so on. In this commentary by Minyapunsu or Thupten Chodak, he also mentions that when the afflictive emotions, first of all, it disturbs your mind, as and when attachment, anger, hatred and so forth arises, your mind becomes disturbed, you are unable to even breathe properly, and your earlier state of peace will then disappear. And of course, much is dependent on how strong the afflictive emotions. And when this, as soon as these afflictive emotions arise, for example, when attachment arises, now in your case, you may be allowing attachment to arise, thinking that this will give me some satisfaction, because attachment is developed with regard to someone that you feel is attractive and so on. Now this we can understand by seeing the, by watching the dogs, cats and so on. When their mating season comes, then they forget their food and sleep. And likewise we develop different kind of desire and attachment towards human beings or sentient beings or objects. Now if it is an attachment towards an attractive object, and then because of attachment, you even forget taking your food. You will touch it and look towards it and several times. And particularly if you bought a new watch, then you would make it sure that it lies somewhere where you can easily see the watch. And then on and off, you will touch it and turn it and look around it. So in this way, the peace of the mind is disturbed. And in your case, for example, if you have the experience of buying a new brand car, then and if you are a Buddhist, then you may be doing your daily meditation and prayers. Then suddenly you would go out and look at your car, and then come back and continue your meditation. And then in the case of the Sanghas, if you have a new watch, then while doing your prayer, occasionally you would take the watch out from your pocket and see at it. So this is how your mind gets disturbed. And particularly this is so when you get angry. Now, for example, let us say you are at peace and suddenly a mosquito flies near your ear making a sound, and then that peaceful mind becomes disturbed. And then suddenly, verbally, you would say, this nasty mosquito. And then you would stand up and try to find a piece of paper or whatever weapon you think is appropriate to use against the mosquito. And then because you are disturbed, you even if you go back to your seat, still you will have some problem of breathing. And you will forget your prayers, and then similarly is the in the case of arrogance and the pride. And if you are an arrogant and proud person, then for such a person, how would you develop humility? and how you would develop altruistic thinking of the sentient beings as more important than yourself. So in this way we can easily see that they disturbs our mind. So that is the first feature. And then the second feature is that when afflictive emotions arise, then your mind enters into the object in a very improper way, exaggerating the object or denying the qualities. Now, for example, when you get very angry and develop strong hatred towards the enemy, you will not be able to see any quality in that person who is your enemy, and you see only faults and shortcomings. And when you develop strong desire and attachment to an object, then you see only good qualities, and you don't see any faults. Normally, when we engage into serious studies, we are encouraged to be objective, and we are frequently asked to be realistic and objective. However, when attachment and anger arises, we are unable to remain objective, and we exaggerate and deny the qualities of the object, and therefore you improperly engage into the object. And the third feature is that whenever these afflictive emotions, and particularly the secular type of afflictive emotions, when they arise, they always accompany ignorance. So ignorance, as you all know, is a mind which sees object as having inherent existence, even though there's no such inherent existence. So this clearly shows that the afflictive emotions accompanying it also wrongly perceive the object. And the next feature is that such kind of afflictive emotions further strengthen and stabilize the imprints and the propensities. And so even these imprints, who may be in a very dormant and latent form, but because of arisal of these afflictive emotions, the imprints are empowered and strengthened, and they are then gradually activated, ready to bear fruit. So if you imagine this imprints of afflictive emotions in the form of moisture, so moisture in there, but because of your development of hatred and attachment today, you again increase the humidity or the moisture in that object. And then the another feature is that this afflictive emotions nourishes similar types of emotions of similar types are again empowered, and continuity is in. And the another feature is that these afflictive emotions finally destroy oneself and destroy others. As I said earlier, that in the worst case, you commit suicide. And sometimes when you are very unhappy and angry, then even you strike your fist on your own head. So not only afflictive emotions disturb the peace of your mind, but they also imbalances your health and disturbs your physical elements, and that in turn brings headache, stomach pain, and in this way shortens your life. And therefore these afflictive emotions harm your body, harm your mind, and harms your whole life. And in the case of a person who always get disturbed by these afflictive emotions, for example, if one always remain angry or develop strong attachment, how could such a person do a good business? How could such a person do good studies? And if a person who is disturbed frequently with attachment and hatred, then how could one study Dharma? How could even if you prepare a tea, if you are influenced by strong hatredment and attachment, then instead of milk you might pour water, and instead of water you might pour milk, and instead of cutting the vegetable you might cut your fingers.
So you really become mad. And then when you are mad, naturally you will not only harm yourself and harm all other sentient beings, and it's for this life and for future lives you end up committing negative deeds, and in this life because of anger you engage in a war or fight with others and either take their life or you lose your life. And out of hatred, so you take others' life out of attachment, out of hatred, out of and so on. Now, even in the case of raping, primarily of course it is out of attachment, but raping could also be done out of anger and hatred, as we sometimes see during a war. And so in this way we can pinpoint countless shortcomings and faults of these afflictive emotions that we could see in this very life. And because of having habituated with these afflictive emotions, a similar result will be experienced in the future lives in the form of being born in a negative state of existence and then encountering varied types of sufferings and problems. And as and when these afflictive emotions arise, you become very unhappy, and sometimes even when the manifested afflictive emotions are gone, still you mentally remain unhappy. Now, for example, your hatred, and for example, if this morning, if you picked up a fight with somebody, or even otherwise, if your mind is very disturbed this morning because of certain afflictive emotions, then probably the whole day you feel a little bit unhappy. And if right from the morning, if your mind is slightly disturbed, then as and when you meet another person and talk to them, you are ready to flare up. So in this way, you continuously experience unhappiness of mind, and then from life to life, these afflictive emotions in general, and particularly craving and attachment, they are responsible for projecting one's life into a future life. And it's this craving and attachment which is really the empowering factor, which is responsible for projecting our life in the future. And the next future life is actualized after having empowered the action by craving and grasping the eighth and the ninth members of the twillings of dependent arising. So these afflictive emotions are all kind of followers of ignorance. Due to presence of strong self-grasping, and for example, if you reflect on the imaginary self-grasping or self-grasping that is a result of indoctrination or philosophical studies, then because of such self-grasping based on certain dogmas and philosophies, you tend to develop grasping towards such wrong philosophies and views, and that way you are distanced from liberation. And and because of afflictive emotions, if you are someone who is and when you have these afflictive emotions, you will remain very fearful and unhappy amongst good practitioners and good people. And now in the case of arrogance, probably there is an exception. If you are a very arrogant person, then even if you are making all the mistakes, but because of your arrogance, still you might raise your hands, heads up, and still you think that you are fine. even though others may be making fun of you all around. So such kind of person we very often see among the religious students. Sometimes because of arrogance, even if their knowledge is limited, they think that still he has a lot of knowledge, and see, he's even very arrogant. So what I'm saying here is that because of these afflictive emotions, if you made some mistake, then irrespective of whether it is known by others or not, when you live in association with other people, you feel a little bit weak and discouraged. So that is the result of afflictive emotions. And if you let yourselves overpowered by these afflictive emotions, like hatred, anger, and so on, then you will become very kind of notorious, and your bad reputation will spread all around, and Buddhas and Bodhisattvas will feel very sad and displeased. And particularly in the case of us who professes to be the follower of the Buddha and the great masters, if you lead a life which is contradictory to what they aspire and what they wish, they will definitely get discouraged. And similarly, the genuine guardians of the teaching, they will also get pleased. And then finally, you go empty-handed. And in this way, you will misuse your human life. As the great master, Jingmi Jelwen Jungni, he speaks about two kinds of human life. One which is called the precious human life. Another is the horrible human life. The horrible human life refers to those lives where you practice afflictive emotions and thereby destroy yourself, destroy others, destroy this life and destroy future lives. So instead of leading such a life, it is better that you are born as an animal so that you can occasionally eat grass, drink water, and and without engaging in many destructive actions. So in this way you should reflect on such faults and shortcomings of emotions. So this is a very nice statement about the nature and faults of afflictive emotions. So therefore, in the case of all of us, it is extremely important to understand the faults and the features of afflictive emotions. And so through that way, you should really develop some kind of strong disliking and discussion towards these afflictive emotions, so that you dislike even hearing the name of afflictive emotions or nyomo. But then of course, there are statements like being able to transform afflictive emotions into the path. And also in the tantric practice, there is this talk of employing the afflictive emotions on the spiritual path. But you should understand these are not easy, these are not very easy to understand. And one who is able to employ the afflictive emotions on the path are those who had really seen the faults of afflictive emotions. If this is not the case, now for example in the tantric practice, they talk about employing the afflictive emotions on the path by giving the example that just as just as a kind of insect or worm that is found within the tree itself destroys the tree, similarly the afflictive emotions are transformed into the path. So therefore here we are not talking about, so here we are not saying that one can use all types of afflictive emotions on the path. If this is the case, then there is no need to undertake the deity yoga practice. And if you are someone, if you are a tantric practitioner who is able to properly undertake the deity yoga practice, which is done by first of all having a clear understanding of the meaning of emptiness, and then the mind perceiving that emptiness is generated into the form of a deity, and when you have such a stable practice of deity yoga practice, then there is the possibilities of using afflictive emotions on the path, but otherwise it is not necessary. So therefore you should not get the impression that even at the level of Buddhahood there is the presence of engaging in kind of ordinary sex. So whether it's if you are able to gain a proper understanding of the Mahayana and the Tantric path, then you will be able to understand that right from the Vinaya practice until to the highest Tantric path, if you reflect on the highest path and the final stage before achieving enlightenment, there is this talk of using the clear light mind on the path to destroy the negative emotions. So this clearly shows that afflictive emotions are identified as an object of elimination. So therefore these afflictive emotions are the real enemy. And since you need to wage a war against these afflictive emotions, it is important to realize that it is not going to be easy to wage a war with afflictive emotions, because we are habituated with these afflictive emotions for a long time and we are not used to it developing the positive antidotes. The antidotes are still very weak, and therefore when you wage a war against these afflictive emotions, it is really difficult. So therefore, when it is important to know that when you fight against the afflictive emotions, you are going to encounter certain hardships. Therefore, you should be mentally prepared and do not discourage. This is being explained in this verse where it says, therefore, so long as I am unable to directly destroy these afflictive emotions, till that long, I will not give up my endeavor. I will not give up my effort. So what you are saying here is that not only at the level of visualization, but in practical sense, so long as I am not able to directly destroy this enemy of afflictive emotions, I will never give up my attempt and effort. For example, in an ordinary sense, even in the case of when you get angry, even with a minor irritation or minor harm, then because of that irritation and harm, if you are unable to destroy that small harm, then those people who are full of arrogance and who are determined to destroy the enemy, they will not they cannot sleep peacefully. So if this is the case, then in the case of this ordinary enemies, by nature they are subject to death, and they are full of afflictive emotions, sufferings. So even in the case of fighting against such an enemy, when you actually go to the war, then you make an effort to destroy them. So in the case of these ordinary enemies, by nature they will die. At the maximum they will live for 100 years. And they are already suffering because of afflictive emotion, so on. They are therefore very weak. So even in the case when you wage war or fight against such an ordinary enemy, at the time when you fight with such an enemy, and when you are determined to destroy such an enemy, then you develop such a state of mental courage that you are ready to undertake all sufferings and hardships, like being struck by arrows and bows and other weapons. You are ready to face all those harms from different types of weapons, and unless you achieve something, you will not return. But in the case of these afflictive emotions, they are not like these ordinary enemies. Their harm is not temporary, but permanently and for a long time, they have been the cause of sufferings, and by nature they are enemies. And therefore, I, who is now determined to destroy such an enemy of afflictive emotion, who has always been my enemy, in order to face and fight against such an enemy, I will never get tired and lazy, even if I encounter hundreds of sufferings or hundreds of causes of sufferings. I will ensure that I will not mentally get tired or mentally get discouraged. So all these hardships you must voluntarily welcome and accept those hardships to be able to fight against this permanent enemy of afflictive emotions. And therefore, when you fight against these afflictive emotions, you should even strengthen your courage. Because as we discussed earlier, if people become so much emboldened fighting against ordinary enemies who are susceptible to death and suffering, then one must definitely develop much more courage and determination to fight against the afflictive emotions. Now, when we go to an ordinary war, and while fighting in the battlefield, if you get wounded, and then later on, you will show the scar to others and display it to others, saying that at such and such period, I went to war, and so I was hit by the enemy, and you show that scar to others to display your bravery and to show how courageous you are, and you will show this scar on the body as if they are your ornaments. And if this is the case, then how could I consider these sufferings and hardships that I encounter to actualize great purposes as harmful factors? Similarly, even in ordinary walks of life, in the case of a fisherman or a butcher or a farmer, if you look at them, even just in order to get their daily sustenance and livelihood, they work very hard, and sometimes they even don't get holidays. And the hardship that they encounter is just for their livelihood, and it is in the pursuit of such a livelihood that they bear heat and cold. And if this is the case, then why is it that I can't tolerate such hardships for the benefit and happiness of all human beings? And today I have developed bodhicitta and made a commitment to liberate the infinite sentient beings from the and one makes such a commitment saying that you will help sentient beings get liberated from afflictive emotions. First of all, it is important that you should be free from such afflictive emotions. Otherwise, your commitment has no foundation. And therefore, without first of all oneself being liberated from afflictive emotions, and without knowing one's own state, to speak about liberating other sentient beings from the influence of afflictive emotion is really like the statement of a madman. And reflecting on all these types of mean reasons in order to in the pursuit of destruction of the afflictive emotions, you should never turn your back, you should never change your attitude, and you should never give up your spirit. As is said in the Advances of Mind Training, that in all of your ways of life, you should examine the state of your mind, and as soon as the afflictive emotions arise, you should forcibly and immediately destroy them. And so therefore, without returning from that determination, you should develop strong kind of appreciation towards the antidotes to the afflictive emotions, and therefore you should develop a mind that shows loving kindness to others, compassion towards all other sentient beings, a view that realizes selflessness, an antidote against the grasping of seeing everything as a pure, a grasping of permanence, grasping of so you should develop a strong faith of clarity, strong appreciation towards all those positive antidotes that are against the afflictive emotions, and develop strong appreciation and aspire to achieve such antidotes, and then in the case of these afflictive emotions, you should develop some kind of discernment against these afflictive emotions and wage a war against these afflictive emotions. So you must fight war against these afflictive emotions, and the process of fighting a war against these afflictive emotions is that on the one hand you should develop strong appreciation towards these positive counterforces, and on the other hand develop strong resentment against these afflictive emotions. And at a sudden glance you might feel that this is again a kind of development of attachment and hatred, attachment to the positive qualities and hatred towards the afflictive emotions. But this is a practice that is in harmony with the positive counterforces, and therefore it's not an afflictive emotion. So this is what is being said in the concluding line, which says that such an aspect of afflictive emotion is on the side of the positive counter forces that destroys afflictive emotions, and therefore are not really afflictive emotions. So having realized this wonderful method of destroying the afflictive emotions, even if I am burned or killed or beheaded, I can easily accept all those, but I can never submit myself to the enemy of afflictive emotions. And by employing such positive antidotes, if you fight against the afflictive emotions, it is possible to gain total control against over the afflicted emotions. This is wrong because in the case of ordinary enemies, even if you banish them from one place, they could again strengthen their gather and wage a war against you from some another direction or another place. But this is not the case in the case of the enemy of afflicted emotions, because once you eradicate and eliminate these afflicted emotions, then they can never come back. So in the case of ordinary enemies, even if you banish them from one place, then they go to another place, stay there for some time, and then they gather their energy and power, develop their strength, and then they would come again. And they can again fight with you. But in the case of the enemy of afflicted emotions, once you banish them from within your mind through the development of the positive counter forces, they can never come back. Now, if afflicted emotions should be eliminated by developing the positive counter forces and by seeing the faults, then how could one totally eradicate these afflicted emotions?
This is explained in the next verse where it says,
the afflictive emotions, these afflictive emotions can be removed by the wisdom eye that knows the nature of afflictive emotions. So this is how it should be explained in accordance with the Tibetan version of this verse. Whereas in the case of Sanskrit version, the first word, afflicted emotion, actually refers to some kind of hardships. And the second word for afflicted emotion refers to the real meaning of afflicted emotions. So according to the Sanskrit version, the meaning is like saying that these afflicted emotions, which are weak and which are fragile, must be eliminated by the eye of wisdom. So this could be a reason how they could be eliminated. One meaning of afflictive emotion is that they refers to state of mind which is dependent on improper mental engagement, which is in turn dependent on self-grasping. Since self-grasping is a misconception of the reality, therefore it is no foundation, therefore they are weak. Whereas in the, therefore they can be eliminated because they are weak and have no solid foundation. Whereas in the case of wisdom, it is a mind that correctly sees the ultimate mode of existence of things, so therefore it is a solid foundation, and therefore the more you use it, the more clarity will begin. So wisdom is a mind which correctly understands the reality is there, and therefore they are not fragile, they are very powerful. And in the case of afflicted emotions, they are wrong perception and improper mental engagement, and therefore they are weak, and therefore afflicted emotions can be eliminated. And therefore it is possible to gain victory over these afflicted emotions. And this also implies that these afflictive emotions are not in the fundamental nature of the mind. The fundamental nature of the mind is clear light, it's cognizant and luminous, from the point of view of being able to see the object. Earlier I explained two types of antidotes. One that simply reduces the intensity of this afflictive emotions and suppresses their manifestation. For example, these antidotes are antidotes to individual afflictive emotions and not an antidote to all types of afflictive emotions. For example, loving meditation or loving kindness is a kind of antidote against hatred and anger, but it cannot be an antidote against attachment. Whereas in the case of wisdom, understanding, emptiness, or ultimate mode of existence, it is an antidote against all types of afflictive emotions. And in fact, when we talk about wisdom, understanding, emptiness is in the nature of the mind, and the true existence is not in the nature of the mind. And therefore, when you see the nature of the mind, and then the dualistic appearance decreases and finally disappears. So therefore, these weak and fragile emotions can be eliminated by the wisdom eye. And these afflictive emotions are also non-material and non-physical. And if they are physical and material objects, then even when they are moved from your heart or from your mind, they could stay and exist in some place. For example, if it is a physical object like a cancerous tumor, then we can move it from one's body and keep it somewhere else, and you can still see it. Whereas in the case of these afflictive emotions, once you eliminate them from your mind, from your heart, they will find no other place where they can stay and come back again. However, still we are influenced and controlled by afflictive emotions because our intelligence is weak and because we do not make effort. And we are weak in terms of intelligence, both in terms of understanding of the ultimate truth and also in terms of the conventional truth. As we discussed earlier, that even from the perspective of the conventional truth, we are unable to see the destructive effects of afflictive emotions, and we are not able to fight against them. Now, if you ask this question, why these afflictive emotions have been removed from your mind cannot go to any other place? This is explained in the next verse where it says, because these afflictive emotions do not abide in any particular object, and also these afflictive emotions do not abide among the congregates of the sense powers, and also they do not abide in between the external objects and internal sense powers, and they also do not abide somewhere else other than these three possibilities. So therefore, where would they abide, and how could they harm the sentient beings? So if you analyze the nature of these afflictive emotions, you won't find. And similarly, in the case of the person and the cell, which controls the psychophysical aggregates, if you analyze the self and try to trace it, find it, you will not find any traces of this person right from the sole top of your head to the sole of your feet. And in the case of the mental consciousness, there are so many different types, and by eliminating all these individual consciousnesses in the form of past consciousness, present consciousness, and future consciousness, you will not be able to find it. And because the consciousness that is past is gone and non-existent, the consciousness that is future is yet to come, and therefore non-existent. And therefore, from what is past and what is future, it will not be able to pinpoint a consciousness which you can say is present. So therefore, the consciousness cannot be found,
when searched in this way, and likewise, when searched in this way, you will not also find the eye. And also, when we undertake such a search, we are not undertaking a search having satisfied with the level of appearance, but we are undertaking such analysis not being satisfied with the level of appearance. And without being satisfied by the level of appearance, if when you search, if something is found, then that should exist inherently, but such a thing has never been found. And therefore, these afflictive emotions do not abide anywhere. And therefore, the emotions like an illusion, like a magician's creation. But also, this does not mean to say that the afflictive emotions do not exist at all. They arise by depending on causes and factors, by depending on a collection of causes and factors. And this, for example, these afflictive emotions arise by liking something or disliking something, and therefore, even though there is no inherently existent afflictive emotion, they exist, so therefore they are like an illusion. So therefore, banish the fear from your heart, because once you realize these afflictive emotions like an illusion, there is no reason to develop fear. And therefore, you should get rid of this fear from your heart. And in order to understand the meaning of emptiness, you should make effort. And so without making effort, why should you allow yourself being harmed, being born in a hell and so on? Such an experience of suffering in the hell and so on is like a meaningless suffering, because there is every method to remove such afflictive emotions and to remove such faults of afflictive emotions. And all these experiences in the form of suffering in the hell arises because of afflictive emotions. And next verse is the concluding words of this chapter. So in this way, you should thoroughly contemplate and reflect. And then in order to adopt the precepts that we have explained earlier, you should make attempt. Because if a sick person does not listen to the advices of a physician or a doctor, then how could that sick person hope to get healed from his sickness? So similarly, it is not enough that you know those precepts, but you must adopt and practice these precepts. Next is the fifth chapter. So this chapter primarily explains the need to maintain mindfulness and conscientiousness. So I think in the compendium of all, it highlights five types of
So
So the conscientiousness which has been explained in the fourth chapter, as I said earlier, in the compendium of all five types of conscientiousness have been explained. And so when we talk about maintaining conscientiousness, this is practice to ensure that the obstructive negative emotions do not arise once you undertake such practice of conscientiousness. You will be able to understand what is proper to do and what is improper not to do. And not only you will understand these things, but in all walks of your life, your mindfulness will be aware of what is proper to do and what is improper to do. In all ways of your life, when you talk to other people, and the way you should meditate while reciting certain prayers, whether you are going or sleeping or talking, whether it's your physical action or verbal action or mental action, you will always judge what is proper, what is improper, what is beneficial and what is harmful. And with the help of mindfulness, you will avoid doing those things which are improper. And so this particular chapter, fifth chapter, is maintaining kind of alertness. So it's almost like policing your activities and to see whether you are doing the negative deeds or positive deeds. And in the previous chapter, it is very clearly said that you should not allow yourself being controlled by afflictive emotions. And if you transgress one of the precepts of Bodhisattvas, it will have very negative results. So all this has been taught. And having explained this, then in this particular chapter, it explains about how to guard your mind. Those that wants to guard the precepts, then with great alertness, guard your mind. And if you do not guard this mind, it will not be able to guard the precepts. Now when we talk about guarding the precepts, of course you can have some external restrictions, like in a monastery, the discipline in charge plays a very important role to maintain the discipline of the sanghas, and that also is very important, very helpful. And particularly for some people, the external factor is also very important, but what is most important is your internal aspiration, your wish and determination to guard the disciplines, to practice the Bodhisattva precepts, and to abandon and not do those obstructive negative emotions that hinder the development of Bodhisattva way of life. So therefore, in this verse, you are asked to watch your mind, to guard your mind, in order to guard the precepts. Now, if you let your mind distracted and do not guard it, then, for example, if you let this elephant, wild elephant, imagine that your mind is a wild, untamed elephant, and if you let this wild, untamed elephant without any restraint or without restriction, then much destruction will be brought about. So likewise, if you let this mind distracted, then it will bring about a lot of destructions, like being born in the hell without respite. And such kind of harm cannot be brought about even by a powerful mad elephant. And what is the way of guarding such mind? Just as you would bind the mad elephant with a tight rope, and similarly, just like the rope that binds the elephant, similarly you should use mindfulness and then bind this elephant like mind. And it is through this way you will be without any fear, and all virtuous deeds will then automatically arise in your hand. Because if you maintain mindfulness, then afflictive emotions will not arise. And then, as I explained earlier, all other faults of afflictive emotions will not arise. And in the future also, you will be without fear. So therefore, you will be without any of those fears of this life and of future lives. And as an antidote to these afflictive emotions, you will also be able to develop all virtuous practices like non-killing and all other higher practices and realizations. And similarly, in the world, in the ordinary world, there are fearful animals like the tiger, lion, elephants, snakes, and all other human enemies. And similarly, in the future lives, the guardian of the hell realm, and similarly, the frightful ogresses, and all these harmful appearances can be bound and can be tied by simply controlling and tying this mind alone. Because all these fears arise because of having not disciplined your mind, and therefore by removing the causes of these fears, you can remove these fears. If you control and discipline just this mind, everything else will be controlled. And this is so because the fears of these, the countless fears of this life and future lives, and similarly the countless sufferings, all this is said to be the result of the mind. This has been taught by the Buddha, who always speaks what is correct and what is right. And this is explained in the sutra called Maintaining the Mindfulness Sutra, or Dodi Tembanyasha. And it is therefore in one of Buddha's other sutra, he says that self is the protector of the self, and who else can be the protector? And similarly, self is the enemy of the self, and who else can be the enemy? Now again in the subsequent verse it says that the weapons that you see in the hell realm, who has intentionally created all this, and who has created the burning iron ground, and who has created these crowds of people, and all these said to be the result of a negative mind. And therefore, within these three realms, there is nothing that is more frightening and more scary than the mind, because the main source of the harm is one's own mind, and all your temporary and long-term unhappinesses and sufferings arise from your undisciplined state of mind. So in this way, if you reflect on the state of all individual sentient beings, you should realize that all these individual sufferings that each and every sentient beings encounter arise from their own mind. So these are the explanation on the side of the sufferings and problems. And then in terms of and also in terms of the qualities and positive experiences, the root again is the mind. Now in the case of practice of giving, The perfection of giving means to be able to remove the poverty of all the sentient beings. Then still we see people who are hungry and who are poor and who are deprived. So therefore, how could we say that the protector Buddha has achieved perfection of giving in the past? So this clearly shows that perfection of giving is a state of mind and not actually being able to remove the poverty of all the sentient beings. So therefore, when we talk about achieving perfection of giving, is to mentally offer everything that one possesses, including the results of it. And so in this way, when you practice in that is thoroughly habituated, then you achieve the perfection of giving. So therefore this is again a state of mind. And similarly, in the case of practice of morality, practice of morality refers to refraining from harming others. Now therefore, in the case of saving the life of other animals, how could one ensure all the fish to go to a particular place where nobody will harm them or nobody can kill them? So still we see that countless fish are killed and harmed, and so therefore perfection of morality does not mean that you reach a state where nobody is harmed and nobody is killed. So again, it is a state of mind. When you achieve a perfect state of mind, where you develop strong and perfect state of mind, willing to give up harming others, then you achieve the state of perfection of morality. And similarly, in the case of practice of patience, the unruly sentient beings are countless, like the extent of the space, and it is totally impossible to destroy all of them. However, if you once destroy this mind alone, which develops anger, then this is similar like having destroyed all these enemies. For example, in order to protect your feet from the pricking of thorns and so on, if you are to cover the whole face of the globe with leathers, you will not get enough leather to cover it. However, if you simply cover the sole of your feet, sole of your shoes, this is similar like having covered the whole face of the earth with leather. So likewise, in the case of the external objects, there's no way we can stop all of them. And when we stop our own mind, then there's no need to stop the external objects or others. And similarly, the quality of concentration is also a quality of mind. And even if you develop one state of clarity of the mind, like entering into concentration and absorption, and as a result of that, you get the result of being born in the Brahma realm and so on. Now in the case of the virtue states that you do physically and verbally, in the case of their result, they will not be able to grant a result as is achieved through concentration and absorption through the power of the mind. And similarly, verbally you might undertake many recitations, and physically you undertake many hardships. And if you do this even for a long time, but if your mind is distracted, then the knower of suchness, that means the Buddha has said that this is meaningless. Because when your mind is distracted, they are not powerful. So here again, the mind plays a primary role. And when you undertake a virtuous practice with one-pointed mind, then you actualize great virtue, great deed. And then particularly in the case of the wisdom perfection, which is the most important practice of the perfection. And therefore it is said that even in the case of the most supreme dharma, which is the wisdom understanding emptiness, and this is identified or recognized as the secret of the mind. So secret of the mind here refers to the suchness or ultimate nature of the mind. So unless you know this secret nature of the mind or the ultimate nature of the mind, then even if you aspire to have happiness and even if you aspire to destroy suffering, you will simply wander meaninglessly and aimlessly within the samsara, and you will not be able to destroy the suffering, and you will not actualize happiness. And so long you are unable to see the meaning of selflessness, then because of your grasping to a self which is permanent, partless and all-pervading, and because of your asserting things as having inherent existence, then it will not be possible to get liberated. Therefore, I must properly guard this mind and thoroughly guard this mind, because apart from observing the conduct of guarding the mind, what is the use of observing many other types of disciplines and conducts? So therefore it is important to know how to guard the mind. Stop the session here today.